All right, good evening and welcome to the Allegiance Steam Academy regular meeting of the Board of Directors, June 24th, 2018. Call the meeting to order at 7:02 p.m. The meeting location is 5862 C Street, Chino, California, 91710. The agenda, instructions for presentations to the board by parents and citizens. Allegiance Steam Academy Thrive Charter School, also known as ASA Thrive, is a direct-funded, independent public charter school operated by the Allegiance Steam Academy Nonprofit Public Benefit Corporation and governed by Allegiance Steam Academy Incorporated Corporate Board of Directors. The purpose of a public meeting of the board is to conduct the affairs of Allegiance Steam Academy in public. We are pleased that you're in attendance and hope you will visit these meetings often. Your participation assures us of continuing community interest in our school. Agendas are available to all audience members at the meeting. Note that the order of business on this agenda may be changed without prior notice. For more information on this agenda, please contact Allegiance at info@asathrive.org. Requests to speak forms are available to all audience members who wish to speak on any agenda items or under the general category of public comments. Public comments are set aside for members of the audience to comment. However, due to public meeting laws, the board can only listen to your issue, not take action. The public is invited to address the board regarding items listed on the agenda. Comments on an agenda item will be accepted during the consideration of that item or prior to consideration of the item in the case of a closed session item. Please turn in comment cards to the board secretary prior to the item you wish to speak on. These presentations are limited to 3 minutes. In compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act and upon request, Allegiance Steam Academy may furnish reasonable auxiliary aids and services to qualified individuals with disabilities. Individuals who require appropriate alternative modification of the agenda in order to participate in board meetings are invited to contact Allegiance Steam Academy. Roll call, Samantha Odo.
Here.
Raquel Rawl.
Present.
Melanie Choi.
Here.
Vanessa Okamoto.
Here.
And Andrew Vesti, I'm here. Public comments, items not on the agenda. No individual presentations shall be for more than 3 minutes. Ordinarily, board members will not respond to presentations and no action can be taken. However, the board may give direction to staff following a presentation. Are there any comment cards?
There are none right now.
None. Approval of agenda for board meeting for June 24, 2018. It is recommended the Board of Directors approve the agenda for the regular board meeting for June 24, 2018. Do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Is that motion, Sam?
Yep.
Second?
I'll second.
Second, Vanessa. Roll call vote, Samantha Odo.
Aye.
Raquel Rawl.
Aye.
Melanie Choi.
Aye.
Vanessa Okamoto.
Aye.
And Andrew Vesti, aye. Passes 5-0. Open session, communications, comments from the Board of Directors. Samantha Odo.
None.
Raquel Rawl.
None.
Melanie Choi.
None.
Vanessa Okamoto.
None.
And Andrew Vesti, I have nothing. CEO's report, and we also have an item scheduled for information. You want to loop it all into one?
Yeah, that's fine. We can do that.
Okay.
That'd be easier, especially given that, actually, it's informational. So, yeah, let's just do that.
Yeah.
We'll start off with good evening. Nice to see you all. Happy summer. Happy summer, kiddos. For most of us. Poor man. We'll bounce back. We do have some updates. So I'll let Callie start with some enrollment registration updates, as that's still where most of our energy and time is going into at this time. So, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
We are continuing the process for registration, which means going through and approving all of the online registrations, comparing that to documents that came in, and we're building so both the information into our student information system as well as the actual hard files for our students. And we have sent out records requests and are starting to receive the CUME files from students' prior schools. And so all of that is starting to come together, and that process just continues. And then as well as getting our, you know, IEPs, all of those things in order for that process.
That sounds great. On all things finances, nothing too new, except in July we will, as we discussed before, look at the next draw from CAM. And speaking with Charter Impact, I think it'll be considerably less than $1 million I thought. So that's good. Although it's the amount is really irrelevant because we're right where we need to be. So we'll get that final number soon, and it will likely mean that we'll need a special board meeting earlier just so it can all be in place by the end of the month because we're not scheduled to meet for a little while. So as information rolls in, we'll get that all in a row. Meredith has requested for us to consider, again, obviously we won't vote on it tonight, but you won't vote on it tonight, but consider the an ASA credit card. Specifically, she's pushing for an Amazon one. We're already looking at purchases that we need just to get our office in place, and it's just being delayed if we're, you know, having to kind of look at a, where that fits into our very tight budget at this point of the year, and we have to get this, you know, these resources. As Callie said, you know, documents are coming in. We're putting requests for records out. They're coming in. A lot of them are a bunch of files. It's pretty amazing how fast paper, you know, printing adds up. So those little things like that, that having like an Amazon account might just make those transactions easier. So whatever additional information you want down the line just to help make a decision on that, we'll provide for you. But I just wanted to at least for now plant that seed. The other update in finances, no changes to our last budget at this point, except with we do have a healthy cushion for the positions that I'm anticipating we'll need in food services, which is not in our original budget or staffing model. We're well cushioned for that. But as Callie's finding out as well, as we're getting putting requests for records out and then getting records in, we're learning of specific needs that we need to have in place for students on day one. And so I guess, do you have an update on that, on contract services? Or
we are, as we find out what those services are, we're starting to inquire about contracts for like nursing contract, things like this, that we'll need to have specialized personnel. And so as those come in, we'll review them and then present to see what makes. Yeah,
in a sense. Yeah. And we appear to be in the last stages of our revolving loan application. So this last week I submitted the final request of documents, which included a lot of what we sent before, but in addition, you know, things that reminded me of where we are, where as far as the health of our organization for this stage. Part of that application requires enrollment, proof of enrollment. And so I sent two pieces of data over. I sent the over 1,000 kids in our lottery application, in our application system, and then the 470 currently registered, that would be the right term, right? Registered students?
Yes.
Out of the 480 spots, 470 we have registration for, and those documents are coming in. So again, being a couple months out of opening, that's a very healthy number. So that's an additional case for this revolving loan that, you know, that we applied for, that we were able to submit. All indications show that we'll know in August what that result will be. So, and that's it on finances. We've sort of hit our biggest obstacle to date, and it's been our getting approval for our free and reduced school lunch program, our national school lunch program participation. We're awaiting our confirmation that we have our 501c3 status. So Procopio's working on it. There essentially are two options that we're looking at. Plan A is our first choice, or our first plan would be to somehow expedite the IRS's approval of our 501c3. Our attorney has had heard of success stories and then has direct experience of not being successful in that. So we're weighing, you know, whether that's going to be the best move for us. Plan B, though, if we do want, you know, obviously free and reduced eligibility in place on day one, would be to join another charter or system as their application. They'd have to be receiving food from the same provider. So the good thing is, you know, Revolution Foods is our option, our choice that we want to go with, and they're not new. They have a series of charter schools they're working with. So this plan B is looking more and more enticing at the time, but hopefully in the next week Meredith and I will figure it out and then come to you with what we think is going to be the best. But that's been our hiccup. It's just waiting for that IRS's approval. Then plan C would be to talk to Chino Valley about it and see if we can, until we have that status, use them as a lunch provider. So not nothing against that. It's just the idea of changing lunch providers is not optimal, right? We just don't want to do that. But if we do want to start day one with free and reduced lunch, it is an option we have to look at. So that's kind of been probably our biggest obstacle in recent times. Other facilities, we'll get the keys to this place fully on July 15th. We are going to begin storing teacher resources and so on campus as soon as we're told exactly what we can use. I know that some of the furniture will start arriving, I believe, very soon. And my understanding is the very back trailer that we don't have access to is where they'll be stored, which suggests that a lot of our classrooms are still getting some work done. They're not ready for us to store in them, and that's fine. We did learn that we are going to have the campus will be IT ready on August 14th. So it's a little later than we want, but I'm learning as how this process works. There's a lot of work that goes into, you know, getting even a site that was used as recently as a year ago up and ready for Wi-Fi across campus and so on. Which dovetails, I guess, into my recommendation that we do reach approve a contract with the IT provider, because they'll have to get in as early as CVUSD to kind of assess and help any setup. They'll also be the ones that will be responsible for our hardware setup once that starts rolling in, which is great. So it's one-stop shop for that. Nothing else on facilities other than as I think I shared at the last meeting, when we were able to now move off of certificated positions and look at hiring our hourly and our remaining classified positions. So that has started, and we were looking at, or Callie was drafting the final stages of the instructional aid and special ed aid / proctors positions, job descriptions as well. And as I mentioned earlier, we will need a food service point person. That's not in our staffing model, but we're going to add it. And Meredith and I will kind of come up with that job description and present it to you all. I think other than our LCAP stuff, that's the update. Comments, questions?
When you say we're going to be IT ready on August 14th, does that mean just what CVUSD is going to do, or is that in addition to the company that you're asking us to?
So as I'm learning, right, since CVUSD has shared that we will have turnkey provided to us by August 14th, ready to go. But when I talk to IT folks, they're saying that doesn't mean you're ready, right? You have your hardware that needs to be all configured and so on. So what August 14th represents is CVUSD's obligation to have this place ready for us to come in and then do what we need to do. So the few IT folks I've been talking about say they want to work at the same time as CVUSD is coming in here to do that. So they don't want to wait to August 14th to walk in and start getting our computers configured and all of our printers aligned and all those things. They'd like to start that as much as they can do as CVUSD is doing what, and I can't describe their work. I just know it means we'll be Wi-Fi on August 14th. I think that, does that answer?
Yeah.
It's not, we can't wait, right, until August 14th before we begin doing our work.
Yeah.
The information that facilities did give us around the August 14th date and to an IT contact. He said in order for us to open, by the time the students show up to school, we would like to start in July. Right? We'd like to start in July. Most of the work will still be CVUSDs, okay. But it'll, the more they're aware of what is being put in place, like the type of servers and all these, the language I don't speak, right? I know the more time that the IT folks can spend with CVUSD, then the easier it is for them to help us by August 14th be mostly ready to go.
So then do we have a plan on what we need to purchase that they need to configure? Because it seems like we need to be...
So the line is drawn at, we don't need to purchase the servers, the routers. We don't need to service
right,
the access
points. Right, but like you're talking about the printers, the computers,
yes.
All those things that need to be synced?
So we have on our furniture and equipment list that we submitted to CVUSD that has come back to us, right? Mm-hmm. And it shared that a couple weeks ago. On that are printers and so on that we are not, that's part of the turnkey piece that are supposed to be configured for us. But then there are, for example, they didn't, the no list, right, included teacher computers and so on and other technology pieces. Those need to also be configured to the printers, and CVUSD won't be doing that. So that work would be our responsibility.
But then do they also need to purchase, is my question.
Yes, though, like
because you're talking about a timeline. If they want to start in July, but we don't have the things that they need to start on,
yeah.
Then how do we get that done?
Yeah, because it won't, my understanding is it won't be that work. It won't be on our laptops or whatever technology we're buying. It will also be on the infrastructure to get us ready for those things.
Not CVUSD, I'm talking about
the IT.
People.
Yes, and the details of the message that was clear to me, and without the details, is the sooner that they can start working, the easier it'll be by August 14th that we'll be mostly ready, even without our equipment here. So I don't know if from what I gathered, it's like walking the campus with Chino Valley, understanding what the access points, where they're located, why, and so on, so they can kind of prepare, have as much information when our equipment does show up that is not included in CVSD's furniture and equipment, part of the Prop 39 for us. The more time they can spend prior to that date, then the better off we'll be. So it's a contract, right, which wouldn't involve them being here full-time or anything, you know, like our staff would be, just on the having access to Chino Valley's facilities folks and IT is basically what they would need early on. Yeah.
Will someone be here as far as the first day of school, just in case something does go wrong and we have someone here?
From our IT?
Yeah,
the most of the support ends up being done remote, but in the initial stages, it's on site, including some of the days in our professional development 2 weeks, and then the first day of school.
And then also in regards to like the phone systems, all that, is that something that IT is going to be working on to make sure each classroom? I'm assuming that each classroom will have some type of either intercom.
Right. So my understanding, that's part of the CVUSD's turnkey solution. Yeah. And as several of the IT people have shared, is when we talk IT now, it's beyond Wi-Fi, right? It's integrated phones, intercom, all of those systems, right?
So the teacher equipment, like the computers or the laptops and stuff, when does that need to be purchased by, I guess, for our IT folks to have it ready?
They need to be on campus prior to August 14th. So yeah, so we put Apple products for teachers in our furniture and equipment request and in our startup grant application. And so kind of been in contact with them as well. We have a parent here who's an Apple salesperson, so we've been chatting a little bit about beyond the 10% rate of educator discount. Not necessarily married to Apple products, but I know they're pretty popular with educators. They're a little pricier, but they do last. So, but if those materials are, that hardware is here prior to August 14th, then that's the best situation we can do. So, according to our parent who's with Apple, she believes within a week of our order we can have our stuff. So, and we have those numbers. We have the number we want to purchase. We have to decide. We put in the startup grant. We purchased more than our first year staffing model, so we can go into second year with it. I don't see a reason to change. We're pretty healthy there, but it's just a matter. I think once the CAM, when the next CAM draw is done, then I think we will purchase those, which I guess is a good. You talked about curriculum, right? Our purchase orders are out for those.
Our purchase orders.
So those materials will be on the way too. So once we've taken care of those, and then our payroll in July, we know how much of the technology we can pull off in July or have to wait till the beginning of August. But I'm not worried about the hardware stuff so much that we're obligated for. It's coordinating our IT support with Chino Valley's that I'm interested in getting them talking together. Because I'm the worst middleman for that. I don't speak their language, right? So I'm sure I'm just slowing both parties down if we know that they need to talk to one another. As far as IT support, there's no additional cost for earlier start to a contract than starting in August. So I would push that we actually get that in place sooner rather than later, right? We have one proposal. The other two folks that organizations that I've talked to are considerably higher. And I'm going to push for Optiva when it's time to discuss that. But any other questions there? I think that's it here, right? Other than we're going to roll LCAP into this? Andrew, is that
yeah,
right?
For the just the calendar.
The calendar, yeah. So somewhere in your packet you have the LCAP calendar. This is a proposed calendar of, you can help out over there. So. How about our, can our folks see it over there? Or is that not going to work? All right, can't wait till we're set up for you correctly. It's coming soon. The idea of the LCAP calendar, this is a little bit of cart before the horse, but I just wanted to make sure that this was included in the packet so that it was clear that the way the local control accountability plan is developed is with community input, right? So the best thing to do is set the dates, set the focus areas, get us to approve it. We'll set specific days once we look at our school calendar with all other events and so on that are necessary. But this calendar shows sort of the frequency of each of the meeting and the focus areas. There are two types of meetings that take place to help develop and refine and revise the LCAP. It's the overall stakeholder advisor committee, and that needs to include staff, administration, and parents, and even can include students. Then you have subgroups that need to come together for specific subgroups or subcommittees that come together to look at data for specific to our significant subgroups. So, for example, English learners, right? Students with disabilities. If we had a significant homeless population, that would be a subgroup. We could determine what to form, but we don't want to leave a subgroup without representation at this level. And these groups then are going to look at timely relevant data, and they're going to look at our help inform our goals, our action plans, and really hold us accountable to whether we're doing what we said we're going to do, both in our charter and our LCAP. So for this calendar, can I ask any questions on what a draft calendar for an LCAP development looks like before I take a step back into LCAP 101? Any thoughts or comments here?
Nope.
Nothing scary. Cool. Or if it is too scary, don't say anything, right? But developed a quick sort of what is the LCAP, LCAP 101. Several of us have experience with it. If you don't, this will kind of give you sort of just the foundational knowledge of it as it pertains to charters. So when the state funding significantly changed to LCFF, right, the local control funding formula. The whole underlying premise of that was to give more local control to school districts and, in our case, to charters, right? So it's a funding formula, it's a funding model that is consistent with how charters work, where you have considerable local control and accountability. So tied to the funding, where we do have more discretion than previous funding, we're obligated to develop an annual LCAP, a plan, right? It's a student achievement plan that then indicates how we're going to spend the money that we have the discretion to spend. That's the gist of it, right? And then you can kind of get into the sort of the nuts and bolts. So what is it? I spoke to it a little bit. It's essentially a student achievement plan. It is maintained and looked at on an annual basis. It would be presented to you for approval on an annual basis at this time of year, because they are due to our authorizer on July 1st. Our authorizer does not approve it. They receive it. This board approves our plan. As I shared, aligned to funding. And then there are identified through the Department of Education 8 state priorities. I'll share what those are either in a little bit later. And our job then in our LCAP is to align to the relevant 8 priorities for us. And naturally, we have a charter, so that it needs to be consistent with the charter. This does not mean we need goals in our charter. We don't need those exact goals in our LCAP. They just need to be aligned, right? They can't be too and cohesive documents, and as I shared, approved by you annually. A little bit of what it includes, goals. It's goals specific to the subgroups of students as they relate to each of the priorities, and again, consistent with our charter. The resources that we'll use to achieve those goals. And in addition to goals, you need the objectives that are measurable and are service indicators that we're making progress towards those goals. And then after that, you have like basically you have action steps. The part I left off of this, which is key, is the explanations of funding and how those the funding support our goals. So who's involved? This is a group that's involved, right? School administrators, teachers, parents, and we do get input from students as well, usually in the form of surveys, but we can have students on subcommittees as well. So how do you do it, right? Well, fortunately, the CDE gives us a template, and it's not a recommendation, it's an expectation. You use that. And what I submitted earlier was using the CDE-provided template. We develop it informed by our own local, which I haven't talked about, and state priorities. So we get to include our own local priorities in the LCAP as well. In my experience, it's been very beneficial to use guidance from the Charter Development Center and the CCSA. How am I forgetting what? It's summer. My head just went to summer mode. I forgot what our acronyms mean. Our organizations that advocate for charters, CCSA. And then again, as I shared with, in consultation with the school community. So there's a lot of ways of doing that, and charters actually have quite a bit of discretion, but having at Avison, having moments where we didn't have enough community input and others where we did, I'm definitely interested in skewing towards getting as much community input as we can in developing and updating our LCAP. That's just a screenshot of our calendar, and then our priorities. See if we can, I'm going to read them to you because they're not big enough. So the 8 identified state priorities, and again, we would align our LCAP to the 8 that pertain to any of the 8 that pertain are relevant for our charter. So we're not necessarily obligated to have LCAP goals aligned to all of the 8 priorities. Where we would not be appropriate would be to leave out a priority which is relevant for us, right? So if we have a school climate challenge, our suspension rate is high, we have low attendance, whatever it may be, it would be inappropriate to have an LCAP that doesn't address priority 6, right? School climate. The other ones are basic services, so that's curriculum, credentialed teachers, implementation of Common Core, that's priority 2, parental involvement, pupil achievement, pupil engagement, as I shared, school climate, and then 7 and 8 really are emphasizing the secondary, but I've seen them included in K-8 charters as well. And then there's another set of priorities. These are the ones that we determine are appropriate for us. So for example, we might come up with a STEAM priority, right? Given that it's in our charter, that might be an example of a priority that we develop locally. If another sort of need or challenge emerges, we might have that as a priority. Again, you know, should attendance be an issue for us, we might look at addressing that. So other than that, comments or questions on this concept of the LCAP, the idea of having an annual process, not just waiting till June to develop it, but having opportunities throughout to get community input, which is the hardest thing to get and the most important thing to get. Other than that, the data is there, right? We have our budget, which influences this. We have data and student achievement, which we'll collect, so that's actually the easy stuff to get. The hard thing to get is make sure you're getting stakeholder input, so that's why we developed the calendar now. But I've rambled enough, and I know this is one of those areas where you can confuse people more than you can clarify. So, thoughts, comments, or requests, questions?
Is there anything that precludes us from having multiple subcommittee meetings in a month?
Not at all. So
like
I just gave it.
There's a committee who wanted to meet regularly.
Yeah.
But this is just, you're saying this is a template.
Just a template, yeah. So we, and also we don't have to be, let's say tonight we say that looks good. We want to move forward with something like that. We're not obligated to that exact calendar. It's a draft one, right? We don't need board approval for an LCAP subcommittee to meet. We need approval of our plan. Our plan says we will meet frequently, right? If we decide, you know, the English Learner Subcommittee needs to meet every month, then we can just set that as an LCAP team. So the last thing, the funky thing about developing an LCAP before you actually have a school is so much of the template doesn't pertain to us. It relies on prior school, prior year data and funding, which we don't have. So when you look at our template, it is nothing more than a template. It's got a few loosely articulated goals that align to our charter, some things we've already been doing that I was able to write as either the measurable objectives or actions that we've taken, and then it gives us a lot of room within those goals to have the subcommittees inform what we do. So that the LCAP template that you see in your materials will not be that light in the year when we actually have an operational school, right?
And so information for these, for people to sign up, goes out like the first week or before school, or how does that work?
Yeah, so what we can do is, we can already start putting information out there through social media and so on around if you want to join a subcommittee on English learners, if you want to join a subcommittee on students with disabilities, whatever it may be, but those will be the LCAP subcommittees, right? You often have, there's missed opportunities in schools where you do get parents who come together for a specific purpose, and great work happens and great recommendations and decisions are made, and it all looks like the work that should be happening under the LCAP, and people forget, administration fails to connect that to the LCAP. So while we'll push for like a community involvement in these, it will be under the umbrella of the LCAP. So we just need to recruit at this point. And then it'll be our job to, as needs arise to use the LCAP as a kind of a decision screen, much like the charter, right? What could happen is you could have a group of parents come to us and say, hey, it'd be really cool if the school would do A, B, and C. Our job is to say, well, how does that match our charter and how does that match our LCAP, right? And if it doesn't, then it's just something we can't do right now. And the more we can educate the community, no matter how great the idea is, if we can't substantiate it in the LCAP or the charter, it's not going to work for us, right, at this time. Ultimately, it's our responsibility to make sure that it's a decision screen that we're using often and making sure, you know, we're recruiting and engaging the community in the development of it. We'll know we're there when the community recommends something or has a question and includes LCAP in that discussion, right? That's what I have for you. LCAP 101. It's not that exciting. I know. It's necessary, but it's not that exciting.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah. There was nothing to do with it, right? It was info session, right?
That's it?
Yeah.
Everyone good? Okay. All right. Next up, item scheduled for consent. My mistake, it's supposed to say May 20th there, but you had the minutes attached. So minutes for regular meeting of the Board of Directors on May 20th, 2018, and minutes for the regular meeting of the Board of Directors on June 10th, 2018. Do I have a motion to approve those?
I'll make a motion.
Motion, Vanessa. Second?
I'll second.
Is that Melanie?
Yes.
Roll call vote, Samantha Odo.
Aye.
Raquel Rawl.
Aye.
Melanie Choi.
Aye.
Vanessa Okamoto.
Aye.
And Andrew Vesti. Aye. 5-0. Next up, contract for services. items scheduled for discussion and or action. Number one, contract for services for duties related to information technology with Optiva IT. It is recommended the Board of Directors adopt and approve the contract for services related to information technology with Optiva IT. Any questions or discussion?
Yeah, so because it talks about how it would just renew automatically after the first year, is it going to be at the same price or?
That would be determined by the scope of the work, right?
I'm just wondering because it says it renews automatically. So if we're agreeing to this, then we're automatically agreeing to a price, right? Or that we don't know. I just want to make sure that we're not going to get the okey-doke and all of a sudden it's double or something.
Right. That's a fair question. Do you want me to ask them to put some language, change some language in there, or language we would change and send it back to them?
Yeah, I think. Just to make it clear, either it's going to stay the same or... it's going to be less, and anything else we don't want? I don't know.
Because it's going to go up anyways, right? Because we'll have more than 46 devices next
right.
year.
It's based on devices, so the price will probably go up based on the number of devices that go on it. And as our enrollment goes up, right, staffing goes up, and so do devices.
I guess just for transparency and accountability purposes, I'm leery to agree to something that says automatic renewal. Like, I don't know if we can put in something that says, you know, if after a review, you know, maybe 30 days before or something like that, just so that we can make sure, because we might all be at the table, you know, so what we agree to, the next folks might not agree to. You know, the board has changed or anything like that, and I want to make sure that whoever is sitting in those seats has the ability to say yay or nay. But and then do we know when the first bill is due, or do we have to just, it talks about it doing being monthly?
End of August, because August would be, even if work started in July, the contract, end of August would be the first bill due.
And then, like, when they have the Appendix A, so, like, for on-site support, it says included / unlimited, and the rest of the things are, like, included, but they don't say unlimited. So how are those different? Does that make sense? So, like, on-site support says included / unlimited. Do we assume that all of those ones that say included are also unlimited? Or is it just, like, firewall management is included, but only three, as opposed to unlimited, which we get for on-site support? Or is on-site support inclusive of everything? So I guess I'm just curious as to why that one was set out as unlimited in addition to included.
Well, I think it's them traveling over here, since most of the time they're not going to be here. So anytime we call them to come here, we get unlimited visits.
Right. So does that mean? So firewall manager, the one under that, it's included, but it's not unlimited then?
Well, no, because they have, that's ongoing for IT as the firewall, because that's what protects.
So that's what I'm asking. So this assumes that all this stuff will just, is going to happen no matter what. Like, no, how many times we pick up the phone or email or whatever the mode of communication is, it's going to happen for us every time, included in that fee.
That's my understanding, right? That it's, that's ongoing, that's what the ongoing support entails.
So is that the plan, like a 2-year contract?
Yeah, we'll probably grow to a point where we're going to need someone on site when we're over 600 students and so on. But we had discussed this, right, that given the size of our organization at this point, we, in entering into a contract with an IT service, a support provider, we'll get the expertise that would cost us significantly higher to hire someone right now, right?
Right.
In fact, what we budgeted, we would, in entering into this contract specifically, I think we're saving around $37,000 to $40,000 by contracting for the same level of expertise, right?
Mm-hmm.
And with those savings. So, but eventually we'll be too big and we'll need someone on site.
Yeah.
Especially a few years in when our hardware is not new anymore. And you start to see, you know, the pileup of challenges and so on. Mm-hmm. We will need someone who's on site and on staff.
And then when it says, like, obviously based off your prior conversation, that CVUSD is going to provide us some of these, you know, machines, that sort of thing. So then we'll be charged this hourly rate for things not purchased through them, right? But what is that hourly rate? Is it just the $99 per hour? Is that considered an IT project?
Both the server installation projects and, if I'm not mistaken, the IT projects. Well, as this was developed before we received the IT explanation from CVUSD, those were the assumption that this organization would be setting that all up for us, right? We'd be purchasing the servers that they provided for us, and they'd be in here getting us ready.
But because they aren't going to be...
Yeah, they won't be due.
Right, so then we have to pay on top of that, the $99 per hour. Is that the same price for that?
No, my understanding is that's now the work that CVUSD is doing for us. This was drafted before.
But if it breaks, like, if they have to come fix the printer,
right,
but they didn't install it, do we have to pay them? Because if we were to buy the printer through them, then we would get it free, I guess, for them to work on it. Or do we just get it, since they'll be working with CVUSD? I don't know, maybe we can, since we're going to have a special meeting in the near future, maybe we could see if this guy could, or someone from the company could just show up and explain to us.
Explain those details?
Yeah.
I'll do that.
And I know they gave us this proposal back in May, but that's because we were waiting on some other people.
Yeah. So I can contact them and ask for either to be available by phone or be here, right? For our special meeting. We'll do that. Table it.
Well, yeah, I'll make a motion to table the contract for services with Optiva IT. Who's that?
Sam.
roll call vote. Samantha Odo.
Aye.
Raquel Rall.
Aye.
Melanie Choi.
Aye.
Vanessa Okamoto.
Aye.
And Andrew Vesti. Aye. So this is tabled. Number two, the Allegiant STEAM Academy Board Resolution regarding the Education Protection Account. It is recommended the Board of Directors adopt and approve the Allegiant STEAM Academy Board Resolution regarding the Education Protection Account. Do you want to explain what that is?
I was ready to talk consolidated application. Let me get my notes back up.
Oh. Yeah.
I could do it without that. So the account is already assumed in our budget, so we want approval for it. And it's not a considerable amount of money, but being that our budget is assuming it already, the EPA, I think it's a relatively new statute in California. I don't even know if it's 5 years old. That became part of the state budgets about that time. While not a considerable amount of money, it's for a charter in its first year, and the $100,000 or so that it represents for staffing, is going to be considerable. So, I'm forgetting the language of the law, so but I can get that up for us. EPA provides LEAs such as charter schools with general purpose state aid funding pursuant to Section 36 of the California Constitution. It's a component of LEA's total LCFF entitlement. So without it, we're basically taking an $100,000 hit to our budget in this particular year. But because it's a separate apportionment, it does require its own application and then your approval. Other than that, it's not it's essentially newer than LCFF, so it's its own separate apportionment. But there aren't necessarily strings attached other than us applying for it and you approving it.
Questions?
I went through the application process.
We are in it now. So once it's approved, it submitted. Fourth quarter entitlement. don't see the deadline on its submission, but we're working with Charter Impact on getting it completed by the end of June. It's not, and it's not a condition of our MOU or anything. It's essentially
I'm just trying to get a sense of, so it's a due June, like when do we get the money?
Oh, it's part of our portion.
Automatically.
Yes.
So okay.
It's about 200. I think it's around $200 the first per ADA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just lumped into our several apportionments across the year. It's
as not long a separate, as you apply.
Yeah. It's not a separate. It's not its own apportionment.
So do I have a motion to adopt and approve the Allegiant Steam Academy Board Resolution regarding the Education Protection Account?
I'll make a motion.
Motion Sam, second.
I'll second.
Second Melanie. Roll call vote, Samantha Odo.
Aye.
Raquel Rall.
Aye.
Melanie Choi.
Aye.
Vanessa Okamoto.
Aye.
And Andrew Vesti, aye. Passes 5-0. Next, the student dress code policy. It is recommended the Board of Directors adopt and approve the student dress code policy. Questions, comments?
Do we have to say anything about like PE or anything like that, what they can wear for that? Or will they, are they expected to wear what they wear to school for PE at this point? Or are we going to get some PE shirts?
Yeah, so we have a bid in for about $12.50 for the whole kit. I've seen those written both ways in the dress code policy and its own separate PE policy, mm-hmm. which can be. Well, I would recommend we board approve it, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. It's like you're not going to approve if we tell kids they need to bring papers and pens and so on, for example, right? Like we're going to reach out to families and say, hey, make sure your kid has a pencil in his backpack or whatever. So the PE equipment kind of falls into that category. But if we have a specific policy, we would probably. I prefer that we actually present it here, but it's not the same as the dress code policy.
But clothes are different than pencils and pens, right? Because we would assume that the teachers would have something or they could borrow one. Yeah. But the same thing, I think, when we had, you know, we're thinking about cost effectiveness. So yeah. I just was saying something as far as, like, they have an option to wear, you know, we'll have something for them to rent. Like, you know, they had that back when I was in school.
Sure,
you know, like you could rent something or borrow it for the day. You know, I wanted to, but.
Yeah,
you know,
we wanted to, but yeah. Well, and then, yeah, if again, anytime we're saying we're requiring something, we have to have that built in. So the PE dress code would be the same. Same thing, you know, my paper and pen example actually applies there too, right? Where if we're saying you have to have pencils, well, we have to provide them too.
So are we saying they have to wear some sort of PE attire during PE? If that's the case, then where are they going to be changing?
We will have the locker room, which I have not walked into yet, but I don't know the key, but we do have access to the locker room. Right.
Well, I mean, I also brought the PE because it talks about in the dress code that they need to be able to wear things that they could participate in PE, and so that made me think about what they're wearing or whatever. So
typically it was only the upper graders that dressed up for
PE.
So I think even the lower grades are participating in PE, they would have
That's a discussion we have. Go ahead.
Sorry, so that would be, I'm assuming 7th and 8th would be the ones that would be changing for PE?
That's a discussion we've had with staff so far, is that 7th and 8th grade, that would be the expectation, just to give them, and also to give them a middle school experience, right, where that is the case. And we could be more flexible and just decide whether that applies to other students. Our younger students have shorter PE classes. I'd recommend we don't do it, right? We're just losing time there. And that would be it. So
something got changing and actually did PE.
If we want to discuss, you know, 5th and 6th graders maybe participating, getting ready for that middle school, maybe. But for now, the consensus has been 7th and 8th graders dress for PE, and then we can have a discussion around other grade levels. But again, all of the grade levels, the younger grade levels, will have shorter PE periods. So I would kind of push against that, having to change for PE, to lose minutes to changing, right?
And I have another question about, so for the leggings, like black, forest green, blue, white, they can't wear khaki leggings if they had khaki that matches the color?
I guess we could.
I don't know. I just was wondering. I'm just trying to make sure I understand. Because it seems like arbitrary to have blue, but then not khaki, which is one of the main colors.
One of the colors.
And not to say a lot of people have khaki leggings. I don't know.
Is that a thing? Do they exist? Is that...
I've never.
Would you like that added? We could.
I just know, like, for paperwork, from what I'm understanding, is like we have to come and vote, approve all this stuff all the time. So I'd rather us be thorough and then not have to do that. But it was just a question. It just popped out to me because I was like, blue, but not khaki. Again, my kids don't have any khaki leggings. I'm just asking the question.
Don't we say khaki bottoms, though, in general? And then
but this says when you have leggings, they have to be these colors if you wear them under. So, like, if it gets cold, I guess.
Gotcha.
Like, you can wear these under the khaki. They still have to wear khaki short skirts. They're not too short and not too long, but they can't wear khaki leggings.
I think we should just take out all the colors.
I know.
And just leave a leggings.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Before we run into it.
Maybe just say solid, maybe, to be safe, like a solid color or something, solid. So they don't
that sounds
get too...
Again, I'm just, pink and the neon green. Knowing how this has already been a difficult task to get through our, with our authorizer, I don't want to start dictating, I mean, if we just keep it leggings, just...
Yeah.
Where it's at right now, I mean, it was yeah, I think if we just take out all the colors.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that. No, we'll need to have a policy, right, and handbook around professional attire and so on. It's already been discussed around the team, but we do need to have that included as well. So yeah, this is not students. But.
So we're not doing any type of like a formal dress day.
No,
where they see on a polo, like that's this would be it, right?
Yeah, I think it's stated in here. It's our policy, and then we'll have other days in which we can be flexible with themes and so on, whether it's colleges or whatever theme we want to have for that day. But this was drafted with the best of intentions to make sure it's accessible to everybody, right? And if there's any requirements in there's a mechanism to support for that when kids can. That's why there's no specific vendor and all those things. There's the school colors and you know it's drafted around access for everybody and safety, of course, right? Being ready to learn. But yeah, it doesn't. We don't have a. Would you call it a formal? Let's say professional. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if we want to do that on a thematic day, on a day with a theme, we absolutely could do something like that. This would be consistent with this.
Not even going anywhere dealing with patches or logos. Or we would not do logos ever on any shirts, polos.
Well, there's this discussion of every student receiving a shirt, right?
Yeah.
Which is not the polo, the uniform polo. So the polos that we've looked at are without logos. I know it's been brought up a lot, but we've got the school dress code, those simple forest green and white tops.
Right.
If we want to have another special shirt, which we had talked about, you know, providing to everybody, that would be the appropriate
like
place for the school name and logo and so on, like the T-shirt or something. But not necessarily on the. If we can keep the green polos and the white looking uniform, right, then we won't run into issues of discrimination and so on. Which is funny how that quickly turns.
Yeah.
Because when the polo with the shield costs $13 more than the polo that we got at Old Navy or wherever, that's where you start going down that path. And I know our folks will be watching and are watching charters and their practices, so I'd like to keep it as clean as possible.
Will it become an issue like different shades? Like if someone said this is forest green, but it's clearly teal, you know, is that going to be an issue or we don't care as long as they made an effort or?
Well, and that's the way that has to be sort of enforced is working with the families, right? Stating that we're not suspending someone for being out of dress code, and if it's inappropriate and obstructive and so on, that's different, right? Because now you're getting into defiance and so on and disrupting learning. But if you have, and I'm the worst because I'm colorblind, so I won't even pick up on it. I'll just see a green. But if that's the case, then our response is going to be to work with the families and so on. And I think that is a very different conversation than someone who's showing up with inappropriate clothing, right? Mm-hmm.
I think that's something we can put on our website, even like sample polos. Like even that sample, here's a sample forest green polo. So that way I know people ask a lot about. Maybe just have a reference, like, this is a green that we're looking at.
Are we able to even just say,
What's that?
Go to Walmart
we can't do.
We're going to stay away from recommending vendors. Stay away from, if they're close to forest green, they're going to be good to go. Because the last thing, me personally, is us to get this school wrapped up in, something over, our dress code. So the more
conclusive,
that we can, make it, we can just spread the word. Even when the kids come here for their first day to meet their teacher, we can spread the word. That's why we put that picture of all those cute kids on the policy, so people have an idea. But just to let you know, in the charter world, a lot of authorizers they don't like dress code policies or making kids wear uniforms. So we have to just try to be as less, stringent on these families as possible. Yeah. So.
And that's why it's less about consequences and more about working with families. They look, this is why we want, this is the culture we want to build, right? How can we work with you to realize it? That's thoughts on our dress code.
Can I make a motion with the color removed?
Yes.
Can I do that?
Second.
Second,
Vanessa. Roll call vote, Samantha Odo.
Aye.
Raquel Rall.
Aye.
Melanie Choi.
Aye.
Vanessa Okamoto.
Aye.
And Andrew Resti. Aye. Passes 5-0. Number four, the consolidated application for funding through the California Department of Education. The consolidated application, CONAP, is used by the CDE to distribute categorical funds from various state and federal programs to county offices, school districts, and direct-funded charter schools throughout California. It is recommended the Board of Directors adopt and approve the consolidated application for funding through the CDE. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, the explanation says it all. Once again, it's it's an application for efficiency, right, on both state and federal funding. Short of it is, we will not be eligible for certain federal funding if we don't complete the consolidated application. So we've now written it, we've drafted and completed the sections with charter impact, and it just awaits your approval. So, without it, there's federal pool money that we will not be eligible for. I think a description kind of says it all there in the agenda.
Any questions? Do I have a motion?
I'll motion.
Motion, Sam. Second?
I'll second.
Second, Raquel. Roll call vote, Samantha Odo.
Aye.
Raquel Rall.
Aye.
Melanie Choi.
Aye.
Vanessa Okamoto.
Aye.
And Andrew Resti. Aye. Passes 5-0. Next up, the LCAP template. We had our LCAP 101, so it is recommended the Board of Directors adopt and approve the Local Control Accountability Plan template. Any questions or comments? So do I have a motion to approve?
I have just a question. But under whose purview is this, like, to fill this out every year, like, do this?
So it would be me.
Oh, okay.
And then it's submitted to you for approval. But by the time I'm literally plugging in tables and narrative, it's been informed by those subcommittees.
All those things. Okay,
yeah.
That's what I was wondering. Okay.
So input, the subcommittees give input. They don't drive the plan, right? Our charter, our funding, our priorities, our goals drive
the plan. But the subcommittee wouldn't have to input all this stuff.
No.
That's what I was wondering. Okay.
No, that would be us.
Got it.
Anyway, so, yeah.
And are we going to get LCAP updates throughout the year?
Yes. So that's in the CEO's report. Now that we'll start to have one, like that's what we'll do. Is it'll just be part of the CEO's report until it's time for a vote, right, for an action item, but approving it. So yeah, it's a tricky time when we are obligated to have an LCAP at this point, but much of the template assumes we're a school that's operational already. So this is why you see a very light template. There's no direction on how many goals you have to have. So if you look at best practices and school-wide plans, you don't want too many goals, right? We want 2 to 4 goals that our organization, our community know, and so on. So they're currently, the draft goals are informed by the charter and then also the state priorities, which are the ones that will apply to us. But the unknowns are, right, our student achievement data. We're just now getting data on our actual kids, too, right? We couldn't even specifically answer the English learner question yet, right? So we're kind of estimating that. So this is largely, it's informed by what we know and our charter and in our as our enrollment data is kind of coming in, our funding, but it is very much a draft form. So this will be updated and presented, like, now that we have data on English learners, this is what we want to present to you and, you know, shape our goals if relevant for us. But the template's a great guide. It's just, this will serve what the subcommittees do, right? They'll help shape our actions toward meeting our goals. What I'll be largely responsible for is how the budgeted expenditures apply here, right? And currently I work with Charter Impact. I work with Callie and with Meredith on that to make sure what we say we're going to spend on curriculum is what we're spending. And if it's not that, then we're substantiating why. So, for example, we will have an update on this. We budgeted about $130,000 for curriculum. And we think we're going to come in under that because we're going to use, you know, digital tools for history and science and so on. And given that some of our furniture and equipment included, like science equipment and so on and things like that, that will be adjusted, right? It'll be adjusted in the positive, right, and so on. Our furniture and equipment will be adjusted because our budget still assumed that we were not being provided that by CVUSD. So that will come down. And when the opposite is true, right, when if we budget $15,000 for professional development and realize we need $18,000, then that's something we present here as well and make adjustments. Yeah, any other questions on the drafts so far?
So do I have a motion to adopt and approve the LCAP template?
I'll make a motion.
Motion Vanessa, second?
I'll second.
Second, is that Melanie? Yeah. Yes, all right. Roll call vote, Samantha Odo?
Aye.
Raquel Rawl?
Aye.
Melanie Choi?
Aye.
Vanessa Okamoto?
Aye.
And Andrew Vesti, aye. Passes 5-0. Adjournment. It is recommended the Board of Directors adjourn the regular board meeting for June 24th, 2018. Motion?
I'll make a motion that we adjourn.
Motion Raquel, second?
Awesome.
Second, Sam. Roll call vote, Samantha Odo? Raquel Rawl?
Aye.
Melanie Choi?
Aye.
Vanessa Okamoto?
Aye.
And Andrew Vesti, aye. Passes 5-0. The meeting is adjourned at 8:06 p.m.